Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, the show that gives you a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we are going to be going with a much newer band than we usually do. I mean, these guys are only a little more than a dozen years old. 2004 is when these guys started. So they might be one of the newer bands we've ever taken a look at on the show. And that, you know, just goes to show you how we try to do the balance between the old, the new, the not so old, the not so new, and try and give you something that's a good variety. And whether they've got an exclamation point in their name or they don't, you've probably heard of the band Panic at the Disco. That is who we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I came into this week a little skeptical. And I walked out of this week with a whole new appreciation of what the kids listen to.
Yeah, totally. It's funny because they came out of that whole time that we were getting bands like The Vines and Jet and The Killers and a few other bands like that. I'm trying to think of like Jared Leto's band and basically all the stuff that kind of came around that time. And it was a very easy time to kind of dismiss a band because they sounded a lot like everything else that came out around that same time. And when you go through the catalog, and admittedly, it's not a huge catalog of music by Panic at the Disco, not a ton of albums to go through. I think what it ended up being six. Yeah. Studio albums.
Yeah, then there's some EPs and compilations, yep, and stuff.
Yeah, it's a very enjoyable catalog, and it's a very solid catalog. I was surprised at how many of the non, quote-unquote, hit tracks I really, really enjoyed. I mean, a lot more than I was expecting, and really enjoyed this week. So I'm glad we put these guys on the list, and I'm glad we decided to do this episode.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking we might need to step out of our old man baskets more on occasion.
I think so, too. I mean, I think, you know, there's something to be said for doing the variety on the show, like doing the 60s groups and the 70s groups and 80s stuff. But I think a couple 2000s bands every season is not a bad idea.
No, it keeps us young at heart.
Is that what it is? That's the solution. So let's talk about these guys. The lineup, Brandon Urey on vocals, Dallin Weeks on bass, Kenneth Harris on guitar, and Dan Polovich on drums, four-piece outfit, formed in 2004 in Las Vegas.
And there's been some changes in the lineup, but this is what was listed as the current.
Right.
The current touring lineup or something like that.
Yeah, because you look at the original lineup, Ryan Ross, Spencer Smith, Brent Wilson, and Brandon Urey. Basically, Brandon Urey is the only constant in that original lineup that's still with them today. Mm-hmm. And it is a consistent sound. I guess we'll take a look at who left, who came back, and who joined the band, that sort of thing, as we go album by album. Back in high school, though, they recorded demos. Their influences included the Beatles, the Zombies, Beach Boys. However, they started as a Blink 182 cover band. I kind of can hear that in that first album.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit.
Yes, very much so.
They signed without having even played a live show. And they claimed that the music scene in Vegas is bad. That's interesting. That's an interesting declaration. Because again, I mentioned The Killers a second ago. Imagine Dragons is, I believe, a Las Vegas band, of course. Same Sex Mary out there that I'm friends with. And I've seen a lot of indie bands and indie acts come out of Vegas. And I wouldn't necessarily say that the music scene in Las Vegas is bad, but it does feel like compared to other parts of the country, it's a lot harder to break out of that bubble of Las Vegas that the bands in Vegas don't often go big beyond Vegas, with the exception of the few that I mentioned. But really, honestly, before we did this lineup, I didn't even realize that Panic at the Disco was a Las Vegas band. I knew about Killers. I knew about Imagine Dragons. You know, all of our Rat Pack stuff that we talked about and a couple bands here and there. But
what's interesting
this one surprised me.
What's interesting is both Imagine Dragons and Panic at the Disco actually have roots in Utah before they go to Vegas.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Am I about to get to that?
No. I didn't throw that in there, but both of them have roots in like Imagine Dragons has roots in Provo, Utah, and Panic at the Disco has roots in St. George.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting. Early demos that they did, three of them were Time to Dance, Nails for Breakfast, and Tax for Snack, and Camisado. Oh, I guess it was Time to Dance, Nails for Breakfast, Tax for Snack.
Yeah, I had to put the dash there to make it part of the same title because the comma would have really screwed you up.
It would have sounded like, well, that's four early demos.
Yeah.
So that's the connection there. They put them on the Pure Volume site, posted them up there, and then sent a link to Fall Out Boy bassist Pete Wentz. He actually drove to Vegas from L.A. just to meet the band, and he actually wanted them to sign with his new label. And so they did, without even doing a live show. The first thing I noticed, by the way, is I was going through their bands and they're, From a Mountain in the Middle of the Cabins, and The Piano Knows Something I Don't Know. And I'm trying to find some other great examples. I Write Sins, Not Tragedies mm-hmm. is a great example. Don't Threaten Me with a Good Time. All of these don't necessarily feel like, song titles. They feel like tweets. And I feel like this is their way of tweeting phrases that they find interesting or funny without necessarily having them go as tweets and disappear after the next few tweets come up and scroll them down. These get to be perennial, forever tweets, basically.
And there's that one, lying is the most fun a girl can have without taking off her clothes. Right, that really yes. sounds like a tweet.
It totally does sound like a tweet. So good on them for figuring out a way to tweet without using Twitter. In 2005, they released their first album, Fever, You Can't Sweat Out. This actually prompted that single I just mentioned, I Write Sins, Not Tragedies, which brought some notoriety to the album. The video for this actually ended up winning the MTV Video of the Year Award. This is that song that's got I Chime In with a Haven't You Ever Heard of Closing a Goddamn Door?
Yeah. So, one thing about Nails for Breakfast, there's a mm-hmm. ton of auto-tune used on that song. And I don't know why, except for maybe for effect, because Brandon's voice is really, really, really good.
It's really good. Yeah, especially when you hear it in those later albums when they take down a lot of the production and arrangement and let him kind of, shine on his own.
Yeah.
And you can hear, I mean, dude's got perfect, feels like perfect pitch.
Yeah, he's got an amazing voice. So the auto-tune was really kind of off-putting, but mm-hmm. I'm hoping it was more of a stylistic choice than something they felt like he needed to do.
That would be my guess, that it's done for effect, because they don't use it. They certainly don't use it a lot on this album or on any of their later albums. No. So it was probably just a, hey, let's do this one with auto-tune. Cool.
Yeah.
They do it. Fever You Can't Sweat Out went certified double platinum in the U.S. in 2006. They recorded it in Maryland. And the album split in two. The first half is mostly electronic dance punk, and the other half is more vaudevillian piano and strings. For sure.
Yeah.
Which kind of goes in line with their whole style. They feel like, they do that. They vacillate back and forth like that on other albums. And even songs like, I Write Sins, Not Tragedies is like it's presented with kind of vaudevillian narration lyrics
mm-hmm.
with a heavy rock, arrangement.
Well, and also, I mean, For lack of spoiler alerty here, but Brandon Urie has, it seems like, a theatrical tilt, and mm-hmm. vaudeville has a very theatrical way of going about it. And I think that bleeds over into the way he presents his music as well as writes it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that if you go to a Panic at the Disco concert and there isn't red velvet all over the stage and behind them and stuff and gold accents, then, they're not taking advantage of their style the way they should.
Yeah, and if someone's not wearing a corset, then you're definitely at the wrong show.
Someone in the audience, I'm hoping. Not that there's anything wrong with that. They went on tour as part of the, or with Fall Out Boy, as part of the Nintendo Fusion Tour.
The plumbers got in for free for that show.
Yeah, they did. Bloop, 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 bloop. Their founding bass player, Brent Wilson, was fired during that first tour. And I don't know who they brought in to replace him. I think we're going to find out during the next the recording of the next album.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Their 2006 live session, which you can only find on iTunes. Good stuff.
Yeah, I enjoyed it's funny. I enjoyed the live recording. I listened to a fair amount of them because we had very few albums to listen to. So I went ahead mm-hmm. and clicked through the lives, and I really enjoyed them.
Yeah, they're a good live band. They did I Write Sins Not Tragedies as part of that. Lying is the most fun a girl can have, but it's better if you do. And a fairly short live session set, but I imagine we do get some more live albums, of course, as you mentioned later on in the catalog.
And I do want to say that the closing the goddamn door thing seems like it was from a real conversation. I mean,
I think so.
That's not something that you write as a lyric without having some sort of background to it. I'm just assuming.
I think so. That whole narration of the wedding and walking in on some people talking smack about the bride. And, I mean, it feels like here's something that happened to somebody in the band. They decide to write a song about it and really keep it as narrative as possible without being vague and saying, you know, be starting these vicious rumors, blah, blah, blah kind of thing. And really, obfuscating the, can't say that word all of a sudden. I'm obfuscating the word obfuscating. There we go. Obfuscation. You know, and really kind of hiding that narration as the subject of the song. No, they put it right out there.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. They, whatever that was, if it was real or something, there's something behind that I would like to know more about.
For sure. In about a year, they went from being one band on a 5-band bill to actually being the headline act on a major arena tour. And that tour, as we kind of predicted, was highly theatrical, had skits, dance numbers, and fancy costumes.
If I had one question to ask them, I would ask them how that kind of rapid success affected them personally, because some people handle it well and other people don't.
The testament to that is the fact that they've released good solid albums since then. You know, it'd be really easy for a band to do a couple different things when they get success that quickly, either to just fizzle out and disappear. Great. We made our money. That's all we need to do. Or to release mediocre albums because they've developed a fan base. So really, why put a lot of effort into it? And I'm really, really happy to say that Panic at the Disco did neither of those things. Yeah. Their follow-up albums, I think, get more and more solid as you go through.
I actually was going to throw in that I think that they're one of the few bands we've covered that really did not have a sophomore album slump.
For sure,
because this second album, spoiler alert, is probably my favorite of their catalog, maybe tied with their most recent one, The Death of the Bachelor.
I think so, too.
But this, go ahead. But the Pretty and Odd, that opening song, just... it hit me hard and I love it.
Yeah, it's great. It's a really, really solid, good album. And it is pretty odd with periods at the end. Interesting that they throw the punctuation, punctuation in there, because they actually take the punctuation out of their name for one album, or maybe I think it's just one album. They actually drop the exclamation point after Panic. So it's just Panic at the Disco, not Panic. Panic!
Well, I think that was in Vice and Virtues when they did that, but what my favorite, no, maybe it was this one and they add it back. I just remember that I thought it was funny that
back for Vices and Virtues.
I thought it was funny that Alternative Press actually covered it in an article for Alternative Press. They added the exclamation point. Like, what kind of world are we living in where an exclamation point makes an article?
Right. Right. So the second album, Pretty Odd. I'm just going to say it with a pause in there. They released the single 9 in the Afternoon ahead of that album. And the album itself made a pretty major change, marked a pretty major change from the sound of the first album. This one they recorded in their home state of Nevada. And reportedly, they were about 3/4 of the way done with the writing of the album and then scrapped it all and started over.
Man, the stones it takes to do that.
Totally, yeah. And still put it out at a decent time. It was 3 years after the first album. you always, you know, always with those things, you wonder what did they scrap? Would it be something you'd like to listen to, or did they scrap it for a good reason? And it's possible that they just scrapped it for a good reason. Well, obviously, they would have thought it was a good reason to just start over. It would have to be a good reason to start over. The album debuted at number 2 on the Billboard Top 200 chart. 54,000 first-day sales units and the first week sales of 139,000 units in the United States.
Those are some pretty big numbers in a digital day and age.
For sure, yeah. And you know, like we've said, a good solid album. Reviews have called it kind of a similar sounding album, a similar vein album to the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's album, because there's a lot of the similar, you know, that album Sgt. Pepper's is so many different styles all kind of mishmashed together. A lot of psychedelic production, which you get on this one as well. I mean, even the album cover is a floral collage, bright colors, old style looking photo kind of thing. So, I mean, there's, you know, there might be something, there certainly might be something to that. I think it's just more that they are fans of the Beatles and Queen and ELO and that kind of style.
And if you look at pictures from the tour, that tour, there's flowers wrapped around the microphone stands, and it's very nature and floral looking, and easy with the Sgt. Pepper talk. You're stealing my thunder for one of my picks.
Right, right. Okay, I won't say anymore. I kind of nudged at one of my picks as well. After this, Ross and Walker left the band because Urie wanted to make more changes to the band's sound. But they went on to form a band called the Young Vanes.
I don't know anything about them.
I don't either. That might be the first time I've heard of that band.
Maybe their work was all in vain then.
Oh, geez. I got nothing. I was really quickly going to try and come up with something artery or that gave him a real shot in the arm or something, but I couldn't do it. Panic at the Disco then headlined the Honda Civic Tour.
I'm sorry. You know, back there was a period of time where tours were like Damage Justice, Octavarium.
Right. Use Your Illusion.
Yeah. And now we're getting the Tostitos Rock and Roll Tour and the Honda Civic Tour, which is a very practical, ecological, economy tour.
It's practical until you have 50 vehicles that go from state to state hauling your equipment instead of one big tour bus. Anyway, let's see. They went out. They went out then with the Rock Band Live Tour, which was to promote Rock Band 2, the game, the Harmonix game. In 2008, they released the album Live in Chicago, as well as an album called Introducing Panic at the Disco, kind of a greatest hit so far kind of thing. I guess an EP, greatest hit so far.
Yeah, kind of a compilation of what they'd done to that point.
Right. They're live, by the way, that Live in Chicago album, again, really good live album and huge, 21 tracks, just looking over the lineup, again, right now. And, this is a band that's released 2 albums and they're doing a 21 track live album.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It is crazy. So I'm guessing that it's, you know, it probably pulls a couple things from other projects, probably some of those, maybe some of those scrap songs, who knows, but a couple of these are like, they do 2 versions of Behind the Sea. They do, there was another one I thought I saw that there were a couple different versions of, Camisado. It looks like they do. No, maybe not. Huh? Yeah. Maybe that is the only one that, that I'm seeing, doubled in here. But still, a good solid live album. Let's see. Dallin Weeks was brought into the band, and Ian Crawford was the guitar player for their live performances. They released a song called New Perspective for the soundtrack of the film Jennifer's Body.
Stop there and let me correct it. I want to live a life from a new perspective. You come along because I love your face, and I'll admire your expensive taste. And from a new perspective, but leaving now would be a good idea.
That's the Jennifer, what's her name? Transformers girl.
Fox, Megan Fox.
Yes, which was probably the only good thing to come out of that movie was the song.
Right, exactly. Alternative Press also reported that they put the exclamation point, boom, back into the name, Panic Bang at the Disco. Maybe that's how we need to say it, Panic Bang at the Disco.
Sponsored by Emeril. That's the Emeril Lagasse tour.
It really is, yes. The Essence of Emeril tour.
Well,
that was the show, wasn't it? Essence of Emeril?
I don't know.
But yes, I know. Yes, I'm with you. All right, in 2011, they released the album Vices and Virtues, mostly recorded as a duo by Brandon Urie and Smith with producers John Feldman and Butch Walker. They collaborated with the band Fun and released a single called Come On and added a new song to the soundtrack to the video game Batman Arkham City.
It's interesting watching them work as a band in the new way you do things with all the goofy tours we made fun of, but they're using games as distribution. They're using films as distribution. They're doing all the things like they launched on a website. I mean, they really know how to work, I guess, this new media distribution system to their advantage. And it's interesting seeing it because a lot of the other bands we've discussed to this point haven't existed in that time frame. In fact, they struggled in this time frame. And this is a band who's taken it and developed their own model inside of this and really made it work.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a different, it's a whole different model than you had with bands like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. And I mean, even slightly newer bands like Pet Shop Boys and Squeeze and NXS, where you had, you didn't just do albums and tours. You did, you know, obviously doing soundtrack songs is no new thing, but soundtrack video game soundtrack songs is very new. And
going on a tour to promote a video game in which you pretend to play instruments. Let's think about that for a second.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. So yeah, it is a whole different time. It's a whole different model for bands these days, to do that sort of thing. Vices and Virtues, the big hit single from this one is Ballad of Mona Lisa. Released as the first single, great tune, and excuse me, and one that you're probably familiar with. If you don't know it by name, then just go listen to a few seconds of it in Spotify or wherever, and you'll be like, oh yeah, I totally know that one. In 2011, they released yet another live album in coordination concert with iTunes, pun intended there, called iTunes Live EP. This time, instead of three songs, they got to do six.
Woo, they're moving up in the iTunes world.
And it's surprising. It's for the time that this came out, this must have come out simultaneously or even ahead of Vices and Virtues, because Ballad of Mona Lisa is not in this. All their previous singles were, like I Write Sins Not Tragedies and Nine in the Afternoon, But It's Better If You Do. But no, surprisingly, no Mona Lisa.
You know, it's funny, when I first saw the Ballad of Mona Lisa before I listened, I thought it was going to be a cover of Mona Lisa.
The song by Nat King Cole?
Yeah. And
well, it would be in there, you know, in Brandon Urie's wheelhouse vocal-wise, for sure.
And because of his other things we've discussed, where they nod to Old Vegas, and they nod to this, and they nod to Freddie Mercury, having him do a song like that would not be a foreign concept. And then I heard him like, no, I was wrong.
No, but it's still another good song. And, you know, I think focuses on a, I need to relook at the lyrics, but Mona Lisa's a prostitute.
I think so.
I think, yeah. Kind of that, more of that red velvet gold accents vaudeville kind of theme that they have.
Maybe that's what we do for a theme show sometime, is bands who sing songs about prostitutes.
Oh, wow. No kidding. I have to trim it down to our top favorite 10 songs about prostitutes. Love that idea. Also in 2011, they released a video catalog, Panic at the Disco video catalog, collecting, of course, all their music videos. A couple years later, Too Weird to Live, Too Rare to Die. This is this was the next album, 2013's Too Weird to Live, Too Rare to Die, which was recorded as a three-piece, Brandon Urie with Weeks and Smith joining him. Kind of building back up after the big breakup after Pretty Odd, basically. Miss Jackson was the first single released from that one.
You were listening through, did you notice the lineup changes? That's kind of what I was thinking, is because sometimes when you have a band who goes through changes, like I'll use Mushroomhead just because we covered them here, mm-hmm. they have a lot of people come in and out and back and forth and kind of a revolving door, and there's been stylistic changes album to album based not on them evolving as much as musicians, but as just the fact that they have different musicians. Mm-hmm. And yeah. with these guys, I only saw them making stylistic changes based on what they wanted to do with that album, not based on who was in the band or who was recording with them.
Agreed. Yeah. And it didn't sound like it, the band didn't sound stripped down in those albums. Mm-hmm. So good on them for whatever they figured out on how to keep a consistent sound without with a dramatic lineup change like they were having.
And maybe what potentially could have been like infighting and stuff like that, they kept it all kind of out of the album and let the album to be its own thing.
Yeah, for sure. Some great stuff on this album. There's a song called Girls, Girls, Boys that was almost in my list. Very new wave, really cool new wave sounding tune. What else? There was that song late in the album, Colorful, which is like really heavy, mm-hmm. Heavy stuff. Yeah, it's great. It's a band that really figured out their sound early on and didn't kind of have to fall into it.
And they also have the wherewithal to make subtle and sometimes drastic changes to that sound, but keep it anchored in what they were enough that they don't lose people. They just gain people.
Yeah. I think so. I think that's a good way to describe it. In 2014, they released the EP called Nicotine. He released Hallelujah as a single without much an announcement or fanfare, just kind of slipped it out there. Victorious was the second single, and that was also written by Urie and a team of writers. Emperor's New Clothes and L.A. Devotee were released as singles as well.
And so this is what's weird about the way The Death of a Bachelor was released, is he released a whole bunch of singles for it.
Before
way it ahead of the album, like months ahead. Like April of 2015, he released Hallelujah, then he released Victorious, then he released Emperor's New Clothes and L.A. Devotee, and then he released Don't Threaten Me With a Good Time. And then the album came out in January.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, months ahead of everything.
Yeah.
Because the album didn't come out until, well, I guess it came out the very beginning of
yeah, it was January.
January 20th.
But that's still April to January of releasing singles ahead of it to build, you know, momentum for it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of a weird combo, he says, of Sinatra and Queen, and was influenced by his relationship with his wife. They also released a cover of Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen for the soundtrack to the film Suicide Squad. Really, really, and I agree with you. I see your notes. Good cover.
Yeah,
totally
it is.
Agree with you.
Yeah.
Pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life had just begun.
So there's a lot of references to Polaroid on this album, and I'm beginning to wonder if it was sponsored by Polaroids, because there's at least two for sure, maybe even more.
Right.
Where he mentions Polaroid pictures.
That's funny. Nothing on the, you'd think there'd be like a little shot on the album cover, like a Polaroid sitting in the corner there or something, mm-hmm. but.
and then of course they drop in just tons and tons of references to things from like our college days, Rock Lobster and Chicago, right. And tons of references to things that would like warm the parents' hearts of the people who were listening. Oh, look at
the... Right, so as they're listening, yeah, they say, oh, it's the beginning of this song. That's the beginning of Rock Lobster. Yeah, totally.
And so, it's a dead, I don't know if they just flat sampled it or if they just play it themselves, but either way, it's dead on because I keep wanting to go, woo.
Well, and they keep the bass line for that going throughout the whole song. So I think that they sample it at the beginning and then turn it into the actual bass line during the song.
Yeah.
And then play it for reels. Anyway, so that's where we're at now. Latest album was last year,
yeah.
Death of a Bachelor, and still going strong. So we'll see what comes out of the future for Panic of the Disco. Well, but
he's right now on Broadway with Kinky Boots.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, they did a full thing on him just recently on like one of those Nightline or 2020s or whatever, and he's now on Broadway doing Kinky Boots. I don't know how long his contract's for with them, but he's there. And frankly, now that he's on stage, I would like to see him pick up some of the classic tenor roles that are out there. But, you know, that's just me and kind of being a theater nerd. But
sure.
I'd love to see him pull out like Joseph or some of these, you know, just world-class tenor roles that kind of need a rock and roll voice for him. But kind of hard to come by because either you have a theater voice or you're a rock singer and you can't stay for very long because you have to go do another album.
Right. No, I totally with you on that. I mean, Sweeney Todd seems like would be a great theater role.
Have him play Anthony, the sailor would be awesome.
For sure. Cool. Well, tell me some other statistics in general or notes, Hammond.
Well, so they actually had a song on the Snakes on a Plane album, which again might be the only thing that, other than the quote, might be the best thing to come from that movie.
What's the quote? I don't know the quote.
Get these mother effing snakes off this mother effing plane.
Oh, yes, I know why I was thinking Jennifer's Body quote. Yes.
No. There's no quotes from that except for why did you watch it, which is just the proverbial question.
Which everybody says when you're telling me you saw Jennifer's Body.
I looked for this, but I could not find it in the cover of This Is Halloween that they did in 2006. Did you find it? Because I would like to hear it. They also, like we said, they appeared on Jennifer's Body, the soundtrack, not her body, the Arkham City album. Then they covered Bohemian Rhapsody for Suicide Squad. So this leads me to the question. What haven't they covered that you'd like to hear them cover?
See, because it's funny because that Bohemian Rhapsody just seems like a natural thing. I would have said that after Pretty Odd that they could do an amazing Bohemian Rhapsody. As a matter of fact, if Adam Lambert currently wasn't touring with Queen, I would say Brandon Urie, easy, is a great pick as well because he's got the range, he's got the falsetto.
The theatricality, all of it.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, for sure. I'd like, well, again, this is kind of teasing never mind. I was going to say ELO, but maybe that isn't the direction I'd like to see them go. I would think something a little bit more body, Police, Roxanne, it seems like a logical one, seeing as the content.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that'd be good.
It seems like it'd be a good fit. And again, he could nail Sting's range in that song. And they could do something very, very burlesque sounding with that. How about you? What do you think?
Okay, well, you kind of got me thinking of my original thought was having them do something from The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. Because Peter Gabriel... Hmm. I feel like Brandon Urie could pull off some Peter Gabriel if he...
Oh, sure.
Very easily.
Was a very theatrical time period for Genesis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then I would like to see maybe... You know how Sting did a solo work in like the Dream of the Blue Turtles and he had that song The Russians and some of those more subdued things? I'd like to hear him tone it down and do kind of a crooner version of some of those older first album Sting songs.
Oh, that would be cool.
Now that you mentioned Sting. And it's not something I was thinking until you mentioned Sting, but as soon as you did, I'm like, ooh, I'd like to hear him do like Russians, because I think that would be pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. Love is the Seventh Wave, Set Them Free, That whole album. Like, do a track by track cover of Sting's Dream of the Blue Turtles. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
And then a bonus track on there, Roxanne. All right, Brandon, we've got your new project for you. It's all set.
Yep, just call us. We'll help you out.
Exactly. We'll produce it. All right, let's move on to our Stairway to Heaven songs. You see Panic at the Disco in concert. You you get your ticket. You sit down. The curtains go up, some red velvet curtains, and some, I imagine, a big plush chair with really accented gold body arms on it. And Brandon Urie is sitting there. And what song are they absolutely going to perform in concert?
Okay, well, they've only got.
I think this is an easy one. I think you nail it too.
Well, so they've got a limited catalog, and I think that the songs from this new album, I think "Death of a Bachelor," it's definitely going to be there at some point at the top of the list.
For sure.
I think that "Emperor's New Clothes" definitely going to be up there at the top of the list.
Mona Lisa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But as it stands right now, I think it's got to be the I Write Sins or Nine in the Afternoon.
Right. What a beautiful wedding, says a bridesmaid to a waiter. But what a shame, what a shame, the poor groom's bride is a whore. I chime in with a haven't you people ever heard of closing a goddamn door. No, it's much better to face these kinds of things with a sense of poison rationality.
I would 100% agree, and that I Write Sins is just such a huge hit for them that it'd be ridiculous for them not to. And going to setlist.fm, sure enough, I Write Sins, Not Tragedies, by far, not even close. 669 performances of I Write Sins, Not Tragedies since 2005. Nine in the Afternoon is the second track, but it's 100 less than I Write Sins. So
did I hit the top two?
Did you hit the top two?
Oh, that's my God. I've never done that.
Well done. Well done. Mona Lisa's not till you get to seven. Time to Dance is third.
Oh, that's something. You know what? Fun. Let's hear him do Everybody Dance Tonight, Wang Chung.
Wang Chung? Having him do Wang Chung covers?
Yeah. That Everybody Have Fun Tonight?
Yeah, that would be great. Would sure. Be,
yeah, why not? That'd be right in their wheelhouse too.
That might cause a panic.
Oh.
Death of a Bachelor doesn't even pop up until 108, but it's so new that that I think if we were just to look at how many concerts they've done since 2016, yeah, they've done 103 concerts, so they performed Death of a Bachelor at each and every one of those.
Yeah, that's going to climb up that list really quickly. And it's going to stay there because that's going to become that's going to become their signature song. Yeah.
Yep, I would think so. All right, let's get to our picks. And this is where, after listening to the entire catalog, we go through and give our playlist, usually five songs, sometimes six, maybe even on the rare occasion, seven of our favorite songs that maybe weren't the big singles. Oh, I might have cheated this week. Whatever. No,
we don't care. They don't have a greatest hits album, so you know what? Too bad.
They don't. Exactly. So I can get away with it this week. My first pick is the aforementioned Nine in the Afternoon.
By the end of history, as we know, it's just the end of the world. Back to the street where we began. Feeling as good as love you could, you can. Into a place where thoughts can bloom. Into a room where it's nine in the afternoon.
Tristan played the song for me. Got hooked into this song, and he would play it a lot while he was playing World of Warcraft. And back then, his desk was right next to my desk in my office here, and so I'd hear that song a lot. And it occurred to me fairly early on that it's got to be an ode to ELO's Mr. Blue Sky. You listen to it, and there's so many parallels and similarities between that song and Mr. Blue Sky. The positivity, but then also some of the additional noises, the kind of psychedelic nonsensical nature of it. There's totally some parallels to that, and I'd be amazed if they said they'd never heard Mr. Blue Sky before writing Nine in the Afternoon.
This song is thick with ELOisms.
Totally,
and it's funny because they were familiar, and I had hints about what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as I read it in the notes, your comments, I'm like, okay, that's all I can hear now. I feel like someone needs to put a mashup together of the two songs, because right. I think it would be a beautiful, beautiful blend.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that'd be cool. I'd love to hear that. Next one is, speaking of comparisons, Nearly Witches.
Set of marching clocks, the slumbering apparitions that they've come to wake up.
From the Vices album, that's not the full title. The full title is
Vices and Virtues.
That's it right there. No, Vices and Virtues is the full album title, but the song title, full song title, oh, is Nearly Witches Ever Since We Met. That's the closing track on the album. Nine in the Afternoon is their Mr. Blue Sky, then Nearly Witches is their Bohemian Rhapsody, because mm-hmm. they go from sweeping, choiry kind of sounding stuff to heavy rock. It's great. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
Next one is the title track from Death of a Bachelor, their most recent album.
The same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing best of the best, put my heart on my chest so that you can see it too. I'm walking the long road, watching the
talk about a showcase for Brandon Urie's voice. This one is great, because it's at times it's sweeping and sad, and then that chorus comes in and he goes way up high and nails it. I mean, the guy, I think if he doesn't have perfect pitch, one of those people who's blessed with perfect pitch, then either they're doing something amazing with auto-tune, or my ears are shot from listening to too much Mushroom Head. next one on my list is Behind the Sea. This is from Pretty Odd.
Left and out over sleeping waves, like bobbing bait for bathing cod, floating flocks of candle swans, slowly drift across wax palms. The men all play along to marching drums.
I don't have a lot of notes written down for this one. I just remember I really liked it. And mm-hmm. I can't remember what I really liked about it. Oh, no, here's what I liked about it, is that it sounded so different from everything else. I don't know if it's a different vocalist on this track, but it's got something to it that really stood out and made me question whether I was still listening to Panic at the Disco.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't sound like, I'm going to say, I don't think Brandon Urie is doing vocals on that one, but I could be totally wrong. My last pick is Sarah Smiles.
Then you called and changed it all. Velvet lips and the eyes to pull me in. We both know you'd already win. Your original sin.
On the album Vices, Vices and Virtues. It's a really sweet song, and it's got a really cool unexpected chord progression. And I'm going to do one more band comparison. I did Queen, I did ELO. I'm going to say that this one is very Jellyfish. I wouldn't say that it's, you know, a lock that they were inspired by Jellyfish for the song. However, boy, it feels like it shares some DNA with some Jellyfish stuff.
You're not wrong. Yeah. And again, I heard it and I'm going, man, what does this sound like? And then all of a sudden I read your notes. I'm like, he's dead right. That is Jellyfish.
Really? Wow. Cool.
So it's funny the whole time. I'm like, okay. And they could cover One Night in Bangkok by Murray.
Oh,
Head.
That's good too. And then there's that, that theater connection too, uh-huh, that, yeah. You, mm-hmm. that you want.
Sorry. Now that question's got me thinking all kinds of stuff. So my five, yes. First song off of Pretty Odd is called We're So Starving. And it really is a modern day Sgt. Pepper song.
Oh, how it's been so long
we're so sorry we've been gone. We were busy writing songs for you. Oh, how it's been so long. We're so sorry we've been gone. We were busy writing songs for you.
It's the opening track to Sgt. Pepper, and I don't know. They had to have been channeling that, because it's them talking to the audience about, hey, sorry we were gone. We're back now, and we're still the same, and we're still writing songs for you.
That's right. And it's a lead-in track, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like it leads right in and end the afternoon, but it is the Sgt. Pepper's to the with a little help from my mm-hmm. friends kind of thing.
Next one's called Hurricane, and it's from Virtues and Vices. And I really, really liked the energy of this one, but I really appreciated the nod to the Dead Milkman in this one. Because there's a bunch of lines in there where they're talking about you'll dance to anything.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I may be stretching it, but that to me, based on all the other things they do as nods, I could see them doing that as a nod to the Dead Milkman.
Oh, totally. You'll dance to anything by Depeche Mode. Totally. I love that song. I thought of the same thing when I heard it.
So I'm glad I'm not the only one, because I thought, oh, I'm stretching. This is a reach. But now that you see it, now I'm like, yeah, this is...
Nope, thought the same thing.
Okay, good. I don't feel so bad now. My next one is A Girl That You Love, and it's from Too Weird. This sounds like something that was written in the 80s, and it took me a while to put it down. I was going through lists like Depeche Mode, Erasure, and then all of a sudden it hit me on the last listen that it's the Pet Shop Boys, and it could be blended in with It's a Sin perfectly.
Totally. Yeah, another mashup request.
Yeah, there's a lot of Pet Shop Boys in that song. And then I picked Crazy Equals Genius from Death of a Bachelor. And then I wake up, you're so normal that you just disappear. You're so straight like commuters with briefcases towing the line. There's no residue of a torturer inside of your eyes. She said you're just like Mike, love, but you wanna be Brian Wilson. Brian Wilson said you're just like Mike, love, but you'll never be Brian Wilson. And I said, hey! I can't explain it, but I love this song. Mm-hmm. The drums, the breakdown, the references about the Beach Boys, all that stuff in there. It's really, really good. And I listen to that a lot more than I thought I would. And it's funny, Sydney only owns a few for songs from each album. And she hadn't really paid attention to this one. And when we were listening to it on Apple Music while we were driving around, she all of a sudden got to a point where she loved this song too.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. So look at the old man turning her on to the hit music.
Right? Yeah, no kidding.
And then since we don't have any greatest hits limitations, I picked Victorious from Death of a Bachelor as well, because that song's fun. It's something that once you get in your head, you're not getting it out for a while.
Yeah, that's the croonery one, right?
Mm-hmm. No, that's not the croonery one. The croonery one, where is it? Impossible Year is
the Impossible Year, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
This is a very upbeat, chanty, stompy song.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. Very good. Excellent. Well, that wraps up Panic of the Disco, but it's funny because I'm for sure not, it's not wrapping up my listening to Panic of the Disco. Keeping them in my library.
Yep. So looking over our list, it seems like, okay, so we both have There are three songs from Pretty Odd.
Mm-hmm.
There are three songs from Vices.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
four songs from Death? Yeah. No, just three songs
three from songs Death. Three songs from Death. So we kind of spread it out, but there's definite favorites.
For sure. And I think Pretty Odd. I think you're right. That's my favorite album of the group. And it, who knows? If it is because there's a little Sgt. Pepper's influence in there, some Yellow influence, so be it. It still feels like it. It's its own thing, but mm-hmm. happy to hear it.
Yeah, it's a very modern take on the things, I guess, that we loved or look for in music.
Yes, for sure. Excellent. All right. Well, let's talk about next week's show. It's a sponsored show. You can go to patreon.com/soundography if you want to find out how to actually sponsor an episode of Soundography. You'll actually be able to tell us what to listen to within reason. We have a few. I think we have a few things we'll say no to. Not many, though, honestly.
No.
But
try us.
Yeah, exactly. But we're going to be looking at the band Stabbing Westward. Now, this is a band I know by name only. If you were to even ask me what kind of music Stabbing Westward did, I probably would have said, I don't know, probably like a country-influenced alternative. I can't remember. But they're more of a hard rock band. Yeah,
they appeared on the Escape from LA soundtrack. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're on the Spawn soundtrack.
Right. Yeah, they're definitely more rock and roll. And what's cool is that their producer, Ed Buller or Buller, is the guy who produced one of my favorite bands, Suede. So okay. I'm excited about
I thought Squeeze was one of your favorite bands.
Well, they are.
You gotta limit yourself, Brian.
That's why I use the phrase one of my favorite bands. So Squeeze and Crowded House, the top two. Suede, they're within the top 25.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Does that work?
Yes.
Can I not say favorite bands if I say top 25 there in one of the bands I like a lot?
Brian
like,
Ibbett.
Like.
So that's another Billboard chart, the Billboard Brian Ibbett 25. Right,
the list. Sure. Very good. And that's going to be coming up next week right here on Soundography. If you want to get in touch with us, please do email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @TheSoundography. For everything else, just go to soundography.com, right there, the website. You can download previous episodes. You can find out how to support the show. You can look at the playlist for this episode and find links to the Pretty Odd album. I think that's a you and I will agree
that's where we're going.
Album to link to. And then, of course, listen to Spotify playlists from our suggested songs and even find a way to support us on Patreon. All of that can be done right there at soundography.com. Don't forget to rate us. Leave us reviews over there at iTunes if you would be so kind, as long as they're nice reviews. Just kidding. You can say whatever you want. It's your review, right?
we don't know where you live.
That's right. we can find you. We have the internet. Let us know what you think of the show. And that's a good way of doing it right there on iTunes. We will be back next week, as I mentioned, with Stabbing Westward. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying thanks again for listening. We'll see you right here next time on Soundography.
Well, that just about covers it.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.